The latest news and analysis is brought to you every Monday to Thursday. In the Israel Update with Anthony Wright, only on High FM.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning. Shavua Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. Good, thank you, Howard. How are you guys doing today?
Yes, well, thank you. Not an easy weekend in Israel, that's for sure. Security forces have said that a man has confessed to killing 19-year-old Ori Ansbacher on Thursday for nationalistic reasons. What do we now know about the attack and the attacker? Because there was a lot of information happening on social media. Then there were people saying there's a gag order, please don't talk about this. It became very, very confusing.
There is still something of a gag order on the entire story, even though these days I don't know what the real value of gag orders is, because there's so much speculation that goes out on social media that actually a gag order sometimes is counterproductive, because this, just because the speculation that comes out is so speculative that there is sometimes some logic to putting out some information which is real and which, you know, is reliable, rather than just allowing people to speculate about things. But this is a very, very, very sad and unfortunate story about a 19-year-old Ori Ansbacher from the settlement of Tekoa. And she was doing her national service, what they call Sherut Lumi. And Sherut Lumi is an option that is available in the most part to girls who come from religious backgrounds and who, for whatever reason, have issues with going into the army, mostly for modesty reasons or whatever, but still wish to do their bit for the state of Israel. And therefore this framework of Sherut Lumi has been set up, which is not only for girls, by the way. It is also available for boys as well. And I do know of some boys who've made themselves available to Sherut Lumi. It's essentially people who, for whatever reason, feel or have an issue with serving in the army, but still want to play their part. And the Sherut Lumi girls and boys do an amazing, amazing job. Working in hospitals and working in children's homes and working with people who have special needs in schools. And they really do an unbelievable job, giving a lot of love and care and attention and a lot of time, much needed time, to these people. And it's an amazing framework. And this is what Ori Ansbacher was doing. She was working at a special needs school in the Jerusalem area. And she disappeared on Thursday, and her friends couldn't find her, and there was an alert put out, until finally her body was found in the Ein Ya'el forest area near to the Biblical Zoo in Jerusalem. And of course then began the speculation as to what was the cause of her death. Obviously it was a huge shock to all of us, especially of course to those people who knew her closely, her friends and family, that she was this wonderful person who seemed to have no real reason even to be there. And there was a lot of questions being asked about, you know, how, what the events could have been that led up to this murder, and whether it was criminally motivated or whether it was nationalistically motivated, because there were a lot of signs of violence. I believe that there was a rape involved as well. These things are not that common in Israel. I mean, there is violent crime in Israel, but it's very, very uncommon. And so immediately that one finds a situation like this happening, it's unclear as to whether this might be a criminal motivation or a nationalistic motivation. And indeed, things did go backwards and forwards a great deal on Thursday and Friday. She was finally buried on Friday morning in Tekoa. And then the security services arrested some Palestinians who were further released without charge, until finally they've come across this individual who has now apparently confessed to having killed, to carried out the killing of Ori Ansbacher. And it seems as if the motivations were nationalistic, because I've seen an article this morning which says that this individual, who comes from Hebron, and is 29 years old, and he apparently there was a story about him having been arrested actually on the Temple Mount a couple of years ago. And then at that time saying if he was released that he would go on to carry out a terrorist attack in order to become a shahid, to become a martyr. And so it seems as if this has finally happened for him in the most bizarre and saddest possible way. that he's returned to commit a crime. It seems as if he probably just isolated Ori for reasons which we, I guess, will still learn about. Exactly how that all happened, found her to just to be a person on her own possibly, or just someone, you know, a weak link that he could attack. And he clearly took her to that forest area and committed a huge heinous crime and murdered her in the process. And so now the security services will be deciding what to do. But what's interesting for me is that this particular crime has really opened up the call for capital punishment in Israel for terror attacks. The general public is saying, you know, that this kind of an attacker should not go to an Israeli jail and be supported by Israeli tax money for the rest of his life while the Palestinian Authority are paying his family money for him being carrying out a terror attack and a shaheed. It just seems that there is no justice in this particular justice system, in this judicial system, and that capital punishment should really be available for terrorists to carry out attacks like this. The law of capital punishment in Israel is that it is only available for Holocaust people who've perpetrated Holocaust crimes, and it's only ever been used once in the case of Adolf Eichmann. Other than that, capital punishment really doesn't exist in Israel, and certainly not for terror attacks. And we've seen quite a number of politicians, of course, all on their election campaigns now saying actually that they support the idea of the death penalty for terror attacks. So that's really what this particular crime has generated in terms of public debate at the moment.
And Israel, of course, reeling from this because of how different and unusual and gruesome it seems to this attack was.
Well, it seems to be very personal, Howard, and that's this is the thing. You know, a terror attack, as we imagine it, is like somebody leaving an explosive device and running away, not even seeing who the victims are, or firing a missile from a distance and lobbing it into a populated area and killing people. You know, those are the terror attacks that we've been accustomed to over many, many, many years. This is upfront and personal. And involves a rape and involves a personal murder, a one-on-one situation. It's not the kind of thing, as much as Israel has suffered so much from terrorism and from deaths and destruction and from violence over the years, it's not been like this. And so this has really opened up a lot of debate and has, as you say, the Israeli society is honestly reeling from this particular attack. Mm.
I'd love to hear from you, from our listeners, 34519 or 061-895-1019. What do you feel about the reintroduction of the death penalty in Israel for perpetrators of this type of crime? I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. Does it take Israel back? Is there a chance that it could be abused, used incorrectly, or is this something that is absolutely justifiable and would act in some way as a deterrent? I'll give you my thoughts a little bit later, but I would really love to hear yours. All right, moving on to another subject. The Labour Party's primaries are due to be held today prior to the general election. Why is there so much interest in the Labour primaries?
Well, there is interest in the Labour primary simply because people are wondering whether it's going to be worthwhile for them even to bother holding the primary, because the Labour Party at the moment is in such a weak situation where the polls are concerned, where you know, the surveys have gone out to check how many seats each of the individual parties may hope to win in the next election. And the Labour Party is in a situation where there is some doubt as to whether they will even pass the minimum number of seats required, the 3.25% of the national vote that's required to even get them into the Knesset. And so this is really the issue with the Labour Party right now. There are 44 candidates who will be running in the primary in order to help to rank who will be at the top of the list and who will then go down the list and ultimately perhaps have them get themselves a seat in the next Knesset or not. Obviously, Labour leader Avi Gabay has been reserved the top spot of the list. And so assuming that Labour does manage to earn at least 3.25% of the national vote, which is the threshold required to get into the Knesset. He will go into the Knesset actually for the first time as a Labour Party member. He previously has served in the Knesset as part of the Likud party, but this time he goes in as a Labour Party leader. But as I say, there is a lot of interest as to whether even, you know, this is even something useful to go about doing, because there is such a there's such a question mark over whether the electoral threshold will actually be reached by the Labour Party, given that they're in such a weak position.
And of course, anytime you have an incident like the one that took place on Thursday, it probably pushes the Labour Party further and further away from any form of relevance and popularity.
Without a shadow of a doubt. I mean, I've spoken quite a number of times about the regular the debate that goes on within each Israeli individual as they go into that election, into the polling booth, deciding whether they wish to vote for the right-wing candidates or for the left-wing candidates. And most Israelis have this dual personality, wanting to have security but also wishing to have social justice. And obviously the Labour Party really appeals more to the social justice side of individual personalities than it does to the security side. I don't think that many Israelis have a great deal of faith at the moment in the Labour Party's ability to really bring true security to the state of Israel. And we see the list of candidates, and we don't really see many individuals on that list who can be regarded as true security specialists, having had experience in the army or through the security services, in the way that we saw, for example, Rabin, when he was a Labour Party Prime Minister and, of course, former Chief of General Staff of the IDF. So he had certain credentials about being able to bring security to Israel along with the peace that he so desired. We know what happened to that ultimately. You know, that's in our history. But at the moment, the list does not really involve anybody who brings security credentials to the Labour Party. And therefore, people will have a very, very low level of trust in the Labour Party in terms of being able to bring security, and particularly in light of events, as you rightly pointed out, that took place on Thursday, but also the clashes that we continue to see along the Gaza border, the threat from Iran, the threat from Syria, the threat from Hezbollah in Lebanon. You know, these all of these really count against the Labour Party having any success at all in the upcoming elections.
Anthony, I'm going to hold the next story over for tomorrow. It is a very interesting one, but I just want to take a look at the lines. Jonathan says various deterrent methods have been employed over the years, and noticeably the most effective one was the destruction of houses after 2001 terrorist attacks. However, it seems to be that these tactics are becoming less effective, and the only method that could work is the death penalty. But the issue I see is that it brings out more nationalistic views, which could encourage more acts of terror. An unsigned says every convicted murderer deserves a death penalty. This should not only be reinstated for terrorists, because, you know, not only reinstated for terrorists, where's the justice for the victims? Mervyn says definitely death penalty must be brought in, especially in cases like this. This type of terrorism is no different from Holocaust criminals. Unsigned says, I think there's a loophole for capital punishment if it's called for by the IDF. And Neil says, Howard, that is, you know, capital punishment in Israel. What does the Torah say? Doesn't it say an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, to be religiously according to the law? Yes, Anthony, can you imagine if the Rabbanut were to control the death penalty? Yeah.
There was a reference to the destruction of homes, and of course that is a tactic that has been used by the Israeli government and the IDF over the years. And in fact, there is already a call for this individual's home to be destroyed. The problem, as was pointed out by that listener, is that there has, you know, this has been less effective, and that's mostly because the Palestinian Authority immediately goes about rebuilding these homes. So actually people get almost a brand new home at somebody else's expense, having had the home destroyed by the Israeli government or the IDF because of terror attacks that have taken place. So, you know, something that was meant to be a deterrent has actually turned around to be something of an advantage, unfortunately, because of the reaction. So some interesting views. I think that this debate is going to persist yet, in the coming days, and we'll certainly talk about it a little bit more.
Yeah, and there are a couple of more messages. I'm not going to be able to get to them right now. We are slightly late for the news. Anthony, thank you as always. We'll catch you same time, same place tomorrow.